All right, welcome back to episode 27, Sports Talk for Fans by Fans, NFL episode. You got Brian here, and I have Alex with me. How are you doing, Alex?
We're doing fine, man. Teams are reporting, getting ready to crank this thing up. Can't wait.
Yep, and as of right now, as of recording, we're at 40 days for the first NFL game. So by the time you listen, you'll be at 30-something. We're getting closer, so... Before we get right into it, just please check out our Facebook group and page, Sports Talk for Fans by Fans. And what we're going to cover today is the AFC West portion, and we're going to cover and break down each team, a little off-season recap, draft recap a little bit again, kind of talk about what they did, things we liked, and some fantasy football information and moves and kind of predictions. So recapping AFC West last year really quickly, Chiefs are 14-2. Finishing first, obviously. Raiders 8-8, Chargers 7-9. Broncos 5-11. So just as we've been doing, we're going to start from the bottom, work our way back up. So start with the Denver Broncos, Alex. 5-11 last year. I think the question going into this season is who's going to be the quarterback and who's going to probably end the season as the quarterback? Is it going to be Drew Lock or Bridgewater? And I guess you can probably rule out that Aaron Rodgers trade. But Alex, what do you think about the Bridgewater Lock quarterback situation?
It's kind of really not much of a win-win situation. I believe the whole adage, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. So obviously they got Bridgewater. You could say he's supposed to be the backup all you want, but they obviously have their questions about Drew Lock. You don't give up assets to go get someone like Teddy Bridgewater unless you think maybe Locke might not be the guy, but, you know, for his sake, I'm guessing they're hoping that, you know, it works out.
Yeah. All right. So with the Broncos, you know, that's the biggest question mark, obviously, is their quarterback position. And I think getting into this is going to be one of the best rosters and most improved teams this year. And also it could go a lot farther depending on how the quarterback play turns out. So the Broncos have their defense kind of restocked, which is, you know, you put that with Vic Fangio being one of the best defensive minds in football. It could be a deadly combination for other teams, maybe outside the Chiefs. But, you know, for last year, the points scored, the points allowed, and their position grade did kind of go hand in hand with their 5-11 record. So there kind of wasn't a surprise there. There wasn't anything unusual for us to look into. However, with some of the additions they had, I think they had some really major key additions. So on the draft side, Alex, you know, the first big addition was Patrick Surtain, but do you think they're going to regret passing Justin Fields, or do you think this was the right move for the Broncos?
At the time, when you think about it, I mean, they still were in Aaron Rodgers sweepstakes. They technically still are in Deshaun Watson sweepstakes when you really think about it. But obviously Aaron Rodgers was the prize. Theoretically, they still could have drafted Fields. They kind of had Fields kind of be the quarterback in waiting. But once again, if you trade for Aaron Rodgers, you'd be in the same situation. So you can't really hate them or down them for just thinking to themselves, let's just take our best player on the board and whatever happens, happens. If it so happens that you get someone like Aaron Rodgers, okay, great. If you may need to trade the asset, go for it. But you can't get yourself pigeonholed. So I think in short term, they're going to obviously pay for it. But I think future-wise, I think it's going to probably end up working for their good because they still could get Aaron Rodgers next year.
It's true. With his new kind of demand he just threw out there, he could definitely just pick and choose where he wants to go, and I think it'd be a good move. But were there any other draft picks that you could see that could have an impact that the Broncos drafted this year?
Actually, a couple of them. Javonte Williams, I think he might end up being probably one of the best backs in the draft. He had a really great career in North Carolina. He was one of the better running backs. And we always talk about the Denver Broncos and kind of getting any type of running back to go through their system, go through their program. And always seems they get backs out of nowhere. I already know they got Melvin Gordon, but Javonte Williams, I could easily see him kind of supplant him by the end of the year. And then also a running linebacker I liked at Ohio State, Baron Browning, and they already were strong on defense, particularly at the linebacker core. They got a really underrated linebacker core. I think Bear and Brian kind of gives them depth, kind of gives them some youth, kind of gives them some options there. They kind of make a strength of strength.
That's true. I mean, their two linebackers are graded as essentially top 20 linebackers in the league. So with inside linebackers, that is. So you know, definitely really good situation to be in. In terms of transactions, though, they I mean, the one thing I guess I don't consider a transaction, but Von Miller coming back healthy at the age of 32, I think it's one of the great things that that they have going on between him and Courtland Sutton coming back, having two major players, probably the best player on offense, best player on defense, both coming back healthy. So, outside that, Alex, what did you see on the transaction side? There are going to be some key additions that they made.
They stole Kyle Fuller. RIP Bears. The Bears had to cut him, I guess, to get Andy Dalton their starter. Then obviously they drafted Fields, so now Dalton technically won't be their future starter. But they had to sacrifice a decent starting cornerback for that. But the Broncos came out of nowhere, kind of swept up and got him. They also kind of solidified more of their secondary with their Ronald Darby. Didn't hamstring themselves a 3-year, $30 million contract. They were already a pretty good cornerback with Bryce Callahan. And then you talk about they re-signed Justin Simmons, who was probably one of the top 10 safeties in football. So those are kind of the things. We already talked about the Teddy trade, but I think they kind of solidified their secondary.
And that Bryce Callahan, he's just a stud. I don't think people know really who he is or know enough about him. But as a slot corner for the Broncos, he's got one of the best coverage grades in all of football, which is even more difficult if you talk about coming out of the slot. I think his coverage grade is an 86.7, the third best in all of football. And you pair him with, like you just talked about, Darby, Surtain coming up, and Fuller. It's kind of crazy the stable of cornerbacks they have, which is great because when you play against a team like the Chiefs, you don't have to worry about where Tyreek Hill's lining up. You have pretty good coverage at any position, so I think that's a great thing that the Broncos are doing. And we'll just see how it carries over this year. But so on the side of the Lost Dogs, the ones I'm tracking that they had, AJ Bouye, Philip Lindsay, I don't think they're really going to miss them. Was there anyone outside of them that they lost that you think is going to be an impact felt?
They lost. They didn't re-sign Jarrell Casey, but Casey's on the back end of his contract, and I actually think he's a free agent at the moment. So they actually, if they actually need some type of depth on the interior, they could always go back and re-sign him. So I don't think he's even been picked up. But like we already talked before, they're already really good on defense. Casey can obviously they could have gave him a little bit more depth with it. But he's not necessary a necessary need because they already signed Shelby Harris in free agency. So defense and tackle wise, they should be okay.
Right. Is there a transaction that you like the most that they made this offseason?
I would probably have to say the Fuller deal just for the simple fact that they got themselves a pretty good cornerback. They didn't have to, pay elite status money for him. And then you give them the flexibility. Because if they want to sign him in a year, they definitely can. And not, he can move on. They could get a good pick for him in a compensatory pick. They were already, like I said, they're already good at cornerback. And then when you take the fact that they drafted Patrick Surtain, they're pretty stocked at the cornerback position. So I like the Fuller pick.
Yeah, I think Fuller is the only one that's on that 1 year deal, like you said. So that kind of gives him good stability even after this year. So definitely a good situation. The thing I like the most is not even the transaction. Just I love having Von Miller back. He's one of the few people that just are so disruptive, on the same pace of kind of as Khalil Mack. And not only that, but with him coming back, man, he's gonna make Bradley Chubb even better too. Bradley Chubb's only been in the league for a couple of years. He's a number 5 pick overall, and having Von Miller opposite side of him healthy, I think it's going to do wonders for that whole defense. I think it's just going to put the whole defense in a better place with Von Miller coming back. He's been a top 4 at his position every year from 2011 to 2018. 2019 had a little bit of drop off, and then 2020 was hurt. So I think Von Miller, still at 32 years old, can still do enough damage. Is there any transaction that you did not like, Alex, that the Broncos made?
It was particularly one, but it's all over kind of how they were looking at the tackle position. Juwan James, I know they overpaid for him, but he obviously had a story earlier this year that he got injured while working out from the facility definitely when the NFLPA and ownerships were fighting over where players should obviously train, and he got hurt outside a training facility, so they decided to cut him. And kind of, I understand it's a dog-eat-dog business, but that kind of really left kind of a bad taste in his mouth. I understand that, but just randomly cutting him and not really having an idea of what you're going to do to replace him. They were signed Cam Fleming and Bobby Massey, but Massey's on the back year of his contract, of his playing. And then Fleming is really just a swing tackle. So I kind of don't really know what direction they're going to, especially when you have a young quarterback you're trying to prove himself in the NFL. I don't know what they're doing with the left tackle or the right tackle position.
Well, with the left tackle, I mean, they did have Garrett Bowles, who was actually the third highest rated tackle in all football last year. I don't think people really know that. But yeah, you're right. With the definitely the other side is there are a lot of question marks. Massey's definitely not the answer. He has been a serviceable tackle throughout his career with his grades, but there's definitely other options that are available. Their cap situation, just getting to that really quick, they have about $28 million available. Von Miller makes $22 million. There is some money to be freed up next year, and which allows them to go after Aaron Rodgers or one of these other quarterbacks next year. So I think the Broncos have put themselves in a really good position with how well rounded their team is. They are just literally a quarterback away. So let's get into the fantasy players and talking about quarterback. Drew Luck last year was the number 28 quarterback. He's only really had 1 year to play. This is his third year, but his first year he only got to play 5 games. Last year he got to play more, but he didn't have Cortland Sutton. He had Noah Fant, that was hurt. The running game, it was okay. Jerry Jeudy had a lot of drops, but at the same time, he had a lot of missed throws his way from Locke. So Locke had been number 28 quarterback at 13.9 fantasy points per game, which was worse than Bridgewater last year, but still better than two on Danny Jones. And he did throw for 3,000 yards, 16 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. But Alex, do you see improvement from Drew Locke this year? Do you think also he can keep the job for the season?
I think he's going to improve from the points per game standpoint, fantasy wise. Like for instance, he had 15 interceptions. I think this team is going to be kind of around a defensive style type team. If he just doesn't make kind of a mistake, they'll probably play that type of football. So I can see his interceptions going down. I don't know if he's going to keep the job for the simple fact that, it's Drew Lock. Drew Lock has been up and down. His first rookie year, he kind of looked like he was going to kind of be in the second coming or something, like he was something. But to give him his credit, last year he kind of was battling a little bit of injuries and different things like that. But I think it's going to start off Drew Lock. I think he's not going to score enough points probably for their defense. They're going to switch to Teddy. And I can see Drew Lock finishing the season. I just don't think he'll play all 16 games.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. All right, next we're moving on to the running back position, which is Williams and Melvin Gordon is kind of the running back share. Early reports out of Denver is that Williams is going to be the lead back. Now, Denver did have the 13th best running attack last year, so they weren't actually that bad off. And Melvin Gordon was 14 yards. So as a number 24 running back, which is what Melvin Gordon was, do you think that Williams can exceed those numbers? Because everything I'm reading right now is that Williams will be the lead back and Gordon will be the secondary back. So do you think Williams can get close to 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns?
For a rookie running back, that's going to be very hard. Then you're talking about in Denver's system, where Denver loves to kind of split up the carries between running backs. For instance, Philip Lindsay had over 502 yards rushing last year. I could see Williams doing way better than that. But seeing him doing better than Gordon did last year on his rookie deal, I don't know about that. That's a lot to ask for a rookie running back. And then you're talking about him sharing the workload. So, but I think he's definitely a play in fantasy. I just don't know if he's going to be, a 1,200-yard total guy with 10-plus touchdowns.
So my one defense will be that we had two running backs last year in the top six that were rookies, with Jonathan Taylor number three with 1169, and James Robinson number six at 1070. So, and they both did exceed six touchdowns. So I do see what you're saying with the whole running back by committee. But when you invest and you trade up for a running back, I just think that you want to prove that he's your guy. And Melvin Gordon's a little bit older. Melvin Gordon's only has, I think, 1 year over 1,000 yards. I think people think he's just, you know, running back with phenomenal numbers, but he really hasn't. He doesn't really have that for his history. Now, one thing I will throw out, Alex, is, and you can let me know on a scale of crazy and not crazy, but I think that Williams will actually have a better year than Najee Harris. So how crazy am I, Alex?
I wouldn't say that's too crazy for the simple fact that Harris is running behind a really bad offensive line. So I believe he could do better. Yeah, I agree with that. Not all right, crazy. So,
let's move on to wide receivers. So last year, their wide receivers, you know, Tim Patrick got thrown into number one position and Judy being number two. But this year they have Courtland Sutton coming back healthy, supposed to be number one. So you have Sutton, Judy, and Patrick. That's a pretty good top three. Sutton's last healthy season, he had 72 catches for 1,100 yards and six touchdowns, which would have put him in the top 30 this last year. Do you think Courtland Sutton can get back to being a top 30 wide receiver with a questionable quarterback and good, solid receiving options all around him? So do you think that he can get back into the top 30 this year?
Oh, yeah, I think he can. When guys have that type of injury, a lot of times when you look at it, you look at the explosion that's maybe getting taken away. Maybe that's a question. But Courtland, he doesn't make his plays off of that. He's kind of more of a physical body wide receiver. So I think he still get his catches. So I don't care about, you know, the injuries taking away his explosion. So I think he can – I think he'll be top 30. I think there's a chance he could be better.
All right, and I got Judy as the number two receiver over Patrick, probably just based on the fact that he's the first round pick last year, but he did have the second most drops, but he also had a lot of badly thrown balls his way. So he averaged 10 fantasy points per game. You know, that's kind of like wide receiver three flex number, not what you expect from number one. He had 52 catches last year, but do you see room for improvement, or do you think there's not enough balls to go around in that offense?
Yeah, that's going to be the question with him, because last year he got 113 targets as a rookie. That's obviously because Sutton was hurt. And actually Tim Patrick was kind of the guy who kind of balled as the number one player last year. The thing about what Jude is going to scare me is if they kind of put Patrick kind of as the number two wide receiver and make Judy the three, because I can obviously see him fighting over the number three spot with KJ Hamler. I know that kind of makes some people kind of roll their eyes or anything like that, but Hamler might be more natural at the slot wide receiver position. So I think Judy could definitely get close to his numbers, but he's got to fix his catch issue. He's got to be able to catch a lot better. I know he had some bad balls thrown last year, but some of them were on him. So, I you know, we already talked about Sutton. I think Sutton is kind of a wide receiver two option. You talk about Judy kind of being wide receiver three. I think he's going to end up getting overdrafted. So some people are probably looking at him as a wide receiver two, but I wouldn't go higher than like a wide receiver three in my opinion.
I think the thing that's crazy to think about is the fact that Judy only had one more catch than Patrick last year, but he had 34 more targets than him. So Judy had 34 more targets than Patrick and only one more catch. So that's a huge red flag. Now, obviously, there's a lot of room for improvement over the offseason, working on catching, but that scares me a little bit. So I think, you know, of the wide receiver core, Courtland Sutton's probably the one that you want to target as your, you know, borderline number one, definitely a number two wide receiver. And then outside that, it's kind of the way I see it is, you know, Patrick and Judy are your flex options. And yeah, that's probably it. Moving on to tight end, Noah Fant was the number 11 tight end last year. However, he was injured, but in man-on-man coverage, Alex, he was the fifth best tight end in all of football. So this offense with Judy, Patrick, and Sutton, and Noah Fant and, you know, your running backs, I think this allows Fant to go into man-to-man coverage. So I'm kind of thinking that Fant's going to have a bit of a breakout year this year. What we're kind of been waiting for, because also I think health is the big thing that's been holding him back. So last year I had 62 catches for 673 yards. I think he's in that second tier. You know, I think that first tier, there's only like three or four tight ends, and there, and then there's a good probably chunk of 7 to 8 other tight ends in that second tier. So I think this is an easy answer, but can he do better than being number 11, which is what he was last year, Alex?
Oh yeah, he can. I don't know when you talk about second tier, because second tier, you're really looking probably between the number 4 and 6 or 7 tight end. I don't know if he can be that high. But you talked about the injury part. So he has the ability to break out. But we already talked about kind of the weapon situation. I don't know, especially with the quarterback situation, they're not going to be enough balls to go around. But I think he could definitely do better than he did last year. I'm not ready to kind of put him in that top 5, top 6 range. But can he be 8, 9, or 10? Yeah, I can see him in the area.
So I guess my argument for this will be that Kelce and Waller were the clear-cut 1 and 2. In terms of just receiving yards, number 3 was Hockenson, Gesicki was 4, Andrews 5, and Noah Fant was 6. And Fant was injured, so he didn't play all the games, and he still had almost the same amount of, you know, receiving yards as everyone else. So I think he missed 1, 2. He missed the game. So he missed a couple of games. So I think that's the reason why, you know, I know Kittle was hurt. Pitts coming back. So maybe that's your top 4. And I just think that he's lumped in that next group. Like, you know, Hockenson, I only know Gesicki is going to be in that second group for me, but Andrews, Hockenson, Fant, Logan Thomas has put himself out there. So I, you know, that's just where I see, I think Fant can improve.
I think if you're a drafter, you're a fantasy drafter, if those top heavy hitters are gone, I think you should definitely take Fant. Definitely. Obviously everybody can't get a Waller or a Kelce or Kittle or something like that. But you know, if you're getting into there and you need tight ends, I mean, there are not enough tight ends to go around in fantasy leagues. I've always kind of said that if you don't get kind of the tire lead, okay, roll with a Noah Fant. You know, you can always roll with those mid-level tight ends that seem like that because they're going to pan out. You just brought up Logan Thomas. Somebody picked up Logan Thomas, didn't think he was going to be a great tight end last year, and he ended up being in the top tight end. So I think he's definitely worth a roll.
Yeah, I just you make a great point, because last year Kelce, Waller, and Kittle were the top 3 in terms of points per game. After that, number 4 was Mark Andrews at 12.2. And to see this huge group of just tight ends, Gronkowski averaged 9.3 points per game, and he was kind of, you know, unimpressive, not like himself, but he was only 3 fantasy points per game less than Mark Andrews, who, you know, we almost put in that top tier. So it's kind of crazy that you really don't want to go crazy with tight end, unless Alex is like, kind of Alex is saying, man, you got to get one of those top guys, or hope you try to find someone that second tier that jumps out. And to me, that's where Noah Fant jumps out for me, as I think he can be the top in the second tier. Let's move on to defense. Broncos last year, Alex, number 22 ranked defense in football, but they had 10 receptions, 42 sacks. They had the 9th most sacks last year, including not having Von Miller. So I think this is a team that can vault up to top 3 in sacks, barring injuries. The thing for them that I think that they will improve on is they had 7 games last year allowing 30 points or more. I just think with the cornerbacks they have, the pass rush improvement, I think all the things are going to turn around quickly for this team, including schedule, which we'll talk about later, of with who they play. They have some cupcake games. With a defensive-minded coach, Alex, I have them in the top 10 this year. I have them going from 22 defense to being in the top 10. How crazy am I on saying that?
I don't think you're crazy about that. And that's what we always tell people, to really look at your standard scoring for defenses. Sometimes teams, the defenses, you get bigger points for sacks. I think they're going to be a sack party next year. So if you got one of those leagues where you're getting a lot of points for sacks or something like that, especially with interceptions kind of going down across the board in the league, I think they're worth a roll. I think at the worst, they're a top 15 or 16, top half of the league at the worst. At the best, you're looking at a top 8, top 5 defense. Of everything runs right. The only question I'm going to be is the quarterback position. Do they turn the ball over, put them in bad situations where they're giving them extra points? Because that's what happened last year. But I definitely think they're a draftable defense. If you're in the later rounds and you need a defense, I think they're draftable.
Yep, agree. All right, let's move on to the Chargers. With the Chargers, I have some major red flags. I'll talk about later when we talk about the scheduling and stuff like that. But for me, one of the things that I think kind of gave everyone a misinterpretation of the Chargers was Justin Herbert's ascension to being a, you know, he's not above average. He's not good. He could say he's close to a great quarterback his first year. But I think he was so good his first year that people forgot how bad as a team the Chargers were. Yes, they did win seven games, but some of those wins were against the bottom of the bottom in the league. And I don't know if that's something that really – how you measure that. Yes, you could say that is a stepping off tool to, you know, a new team. But at the same token, they got a new coach. So, Alex, you know, Herbert, is he the real deal? I think so. Do you see him having any kind of sophomore slump this year?
No, I don't, for the simple fact that the new coaching staff, Brandon Staley coming in, I think he's going to bring kind of that Shanahan, Sean McVay style offense. And we've already seen in this league, those people, those teams that run it, if you got good personnel, you're going to do very well. So I can actually expect him to keep up his numbers. The only thing about it is, are they going to be kind of the ground to pound more, want to run the ball more? Close to what McVay and them like to do. Are they going to air it out because they have a really good quarterback, or are they going to kind of reel it in a little bit? But I don't expect him, you know, to have a really bad year. I expect him to keep it going.
Yep, so getting into some of these additions the Chargers had, like Alex just said, Brandon Staley, new coach, which was the Rams defensive coordinator. The draft, Rashawn Slater, who me and Alex already talked about. We love that pick. And Asante Samuel Jr., in the second round, kind of a sneaky good steal. In terms of other transactions, Alex, is there any transactions that you're tracking that they made that were kind of impact transactions, things that will help the team?
One thing I want to talk about is in the draft. Obviously, we talked about the first two picks. Wide receiver out of Tennessee, I really like Josh Palmer in the third round. You got Mike Williams, who's going to be on his last year of his contract this year. Josh Palmer probably not is good enough to start right now, but maybe you get something right there with develop the wide receiver. Maybe he becomes something, you know what I'm saying? As far as free agency is concerned, I think the one that sticks out to me, you're looking at Jared Cook. He's probably not the Jared Cook that was in Green Bay a couple years ago and broke my heart as a Cowboy fan. I still can't believe he made that catch in the playoff, but they obviously needed some help at tight end, so that kind of helped out a little bit because you need a young quarterback needs a nice weapon like a tight end because that really helps out.
All right, any other transactions you're tracking? The center, Corey Linsley, anything else?
Yeah, Corey Linsley, he's one of the better centers in the league. Green Bay obviously let him go. They also need some offensive line help. And it really helps out the center because the center works with the quarterback a lot more than anybody else. So that's going to definitely help out your quarterback also.
Yep. Some of the losses that I have that the Chargers have, Hunter Henry going to the Patriots. They lost Perryman, Rashawn Jenkins, Tyrod Taylor. Is there any other transactions or any losses that you see that are impactful?
Yeah, they lost Casey Hayward to the Raiders, which kind of hurts both ways. You kind of lose them to your rivals. Hayward hasn't been the same player he was when he came in from Green Bay, but he's been kind of an underrated one of better corners in the league. And I know they drafted Asante Samuel, but Casey Hayward had the ability to play inside and outside. So kind of losing him to the division rivals kind of hurts them a little bit, especially when they're already struggling on defense.
So what transaction did you like the most that the Chargers made?
The one I like the most, I would probably say there's a bunch of them I like. But I'll tell you what, I'll give it to Rashawn Slater. They obviously needed some offensive line help. And I think solidify that. We talked about Rashawn Slater up a lot before the draft. Obviously, his claim to fame is he absolutely shut down the defensive rookie of the year previous year, Chase Young. I'm going to keep saying it until he plays Chase Young and doesn't shut him down. So you had a young quarterback. The offensive line definitely has been a problem. Even when Phillip Rivers was there, the offensive line was a problem. And they did a couple of steps this offseason to kind of solidify that. So I like that they did that.
Yeah, I think their guards were kind of average last year. And Lindsley, I think, for me, so my transaction I like the most is Lindsley. I just think, he being the number one rated center last year and having the two guards next to him, I think he improves those positions. And like you said, bringing Slater. And I think it's nice to see that whole offensive line finally get an upgrade for the first time since I don't know how long, since the powder blue back days of Natrone Means or something like that. It feels like it's been a long time, Alex. But in terms of transactions, you like the least for me. Letting Perryman go, I was not a big fan of it, not because he was an elite linebacker, but because what was left behind. Kenneth Murray in his first year was graded okay, but he was hugely exploited in coverage. The other linebacker, Drew Tranquil, it's kind of a very bad grade he got last year in, I think, limited time. So I think letting Perryman go, I don't get that. I do know that they like to play the safeties in the linebacker position, but I don't think they have enough safeties to do that on this team this year. What about you? Is there a move that you like the least that they made?
I didn't like how they kind of treated the secondary, particularly Hayward. You already talked about your boy a little bit before earlier about Rashard Jenkins going to the Jaguars. But Casey Hayward, it's one thing to kind of let a corner like that go, but you would think they would go out in free agency and be pretty aggressive and go get another cornerback close to kind of what he is. They signed Mike Davis, but Mike Davis isn't going to be anywhere close to what Casey Hayward was to him. And like I said, Casey Hayward isn't the greatest cornerback anymore. He's obviously not where he used to be, but still, you let a guy like that who's kind of help you out during the bad times go and not really replace him with somebody comparable. I love that Asante Samuel Jr. pick, but Samuel's more kind of going to be an inside cornerback. He's not going to be somebody you can play outside, so I don't know what they're doing at cornerback.
All right, moving on to the cap situation. So they have about $20 million free right now. Herbert's still on his rookie deal, so that helps them out as a team. So they're sitting pretty good. They could they're comfortable, able to make additions next year. And let's just go right to fantasy. So for fantasy, their quarterback, Herbert, was number eight quarterback last year, 4,300 yards, 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. He was number eight, but do you think he can do enough to be in the top five, Alex, or do you think he'll stay outside the top five again?
Wow. That's a big question. I think he's going to be better this year. I don't know if he pokes his head in the top five, but I definitely expect him to points-wise per game be a little bit better. I definitely think he's worth drafting, be a QB1. I don't know if he's going to make that leap in the top five. That's a big one, unless Herbert decides he's going to be more of a run threat. I don't know if he could be in the top five.
Yeah, I mean, because right now you got Prescott, Mahomes, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, maybe is their top four. And then right outside that, you got Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson, who knows if he's going to play. But then you got Kyler Murray, Russ Wilson, Brady Jackson. So, yeah, it would be tough. I think number five is probably as high as he can go. But, yeah, I agree. I don't think that's really easy for him to do. Running backs, Austin Eckler was number 11 last year. One thing I do want to point out is that he's never had a year where he's ran for more than 550 yards. So in 3 years in the league, he's also never started more than 10 games. However, if you have him in a PPR league, he's gold because his catching ability makes him extremely dangerous. So being number 11 last year, Alex, do you think he can crack the top 10? Because for me, I feel like they're going to start using the running back by committee there, especially for running, because I don't think he's durable enough to run the ball inside the tackles. So do you think probably hovering around number 10 is exactly where Eckler should be expected, or do you think he can jump up?
I think he could jump up, but this is the problem. You already talked about injury. Injured players stay injured. Eckler was injured last year. I would expect him to be injured again this year. He only played 10 games last year. And then you talk about adding another game into the season. I don't expect him to make any type of jump because of the health. Until I've seen more from Eckler that he could stay healthy, I wouldn't look at him like a running back one or running back two. I think actually think I would look at him more like a running RB3 or RB4 until I have feel a little bit more confident about that.
And I know people that may be listening, you think you're crazy. And I think my initial first reaction would be you're crazy. But the one thing that is worth pointing out for Eckler, he only had one rushing touchdown last year. And the reason why he was number 11 is because he had three games of nine catches, 11 catches, and 11 catches, which put him at 23 points, 23 points, and 31 points. You take those three out, he's more a running back 20 to 25 than he is a running back 11. So, Alex makes a great point. Don't always chase the name. Make sure you guys do the research. Austin Eckler, I do like him, but he would never be my number one running back because of injury reasons and because, he's not durable enough as a runner or used as a running back. So make sure you guys are careful on that one. Moving on to wide receiver, Keenan Allen, number seven. Man, he's one of those guys where, once again, when he's hurt, he's out for the whole year. And I know that because I've drafted him twice when he was out for the whole year. But when he's playing, he's an elite running or a wide receiver. He's not a burner, but he's such a good, route runner that he's hard to guard. So he was number seven last year, Alex. There's three games he missed last year, but of the 14 games, he had double digit targets in all the games but three. 100 catches, but only 992 yards for eight touchdowns. So can you lock him back in the top 10 again, Alex, if he stays healthy?
I feel comfortable keeping him in that top 10 to top 12 area. But back what you said, if he's hurt, if he's not right, he's basically a bust for the year. But he was kind of mostly healthy last year. He's getting a rapport with a young quarterback. The thing about it is that second year with a young quarterback, you and the quarterback start reading things the same. So then it goes from he had like 147 targets, 100 receptions. Could he go from 147 targets to 125 receptions? I think that's very possible, but I think he's going to get a better rapport with it. But back to kind of your red flag with that, he stays hurt, so he can't probably be a wide receiver one. You probably feel more comfortable with him being wide receiver two.
Yeah, I think if he's a wide receiver one, that's okay as long as you have a strong wide receiver two. But as a set number seven wide receiver, he should be able to help carry you as a one, Alex. I think, because when you think about how many people have those, team, if you're in a 10 team or a 12 team, and you're looking, outside of him, below him in the fantasy points per game, there's only two people that had 100 catches, Tyler Lockett and Allen Robinson. So, he's probably on the low tier wide receiver one list
And
there.
also depends on whether or not you're in a PPR league, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because, he, with his 992 yards, it was very underwhelming. So we'll see if that continues again. Number two wide receiver, Mike Williams, he averaged 10 fantasy points per game. He's never finished in the top 30 in his career. This is kind of his make or break contract year. Is he a dark horse pick for you, Alex? Do you take a low auction pick? Do you take a late round pick on him, or is it not worth the risk?
I think he's worth the risk. This the thing about it is usually players that are on their contract year play their best ball. They call it the pay that man type of career year where the guy plays well over what he is. That's why when you guys go to free agency or guys get paid, they get well overpaid because they usually play really good on their contract year. So theoretically, he should play a lot better than he did in the last couple of years. But back to what you're saying as far as value, am I taking him to be a wide receiver two? No. I'm looking more like near the middle end of the draft. If you're in a keepers league or you're in some standard league, just a regular draft, you're taking a flyer on him in the middle of the draft where you've already solidified your wide receiver core. you don't want to have Mike Williams as your lead dog to wide receiver one and wide receiver two.
Yep. All right, moving on to tight end. Hunter Henry was there last year. He was number 10 tight end, 60 catches, 600 yards, 5 touchdowns, averaging 10.4 fantasy points per game. You wrote it just a little while ago about kind of that range of the number 4 tight end all the way down to Gronk, way down there. So he's right in the middle of all that, Hunter Henry was. But Jared Cook replacing him at 36-year-old. I don't think he can replicate those numbers, Alex. What do you think is more realistic for Jared Cook for fantasy numbers?
Oh, I don't see him putting up near Hunter Henry. I mean, if he has 400, 500 yards on the season, I'd say Jared Cook had a good year. I don't, you know, Jared Cook isn't the same player he was 3 to 4 years ago. Can he still kind of catch the ball, kind of do something? Yeah, he can. But Hunter Henry had 93 targets last year. Jared Cook can't take 93 targets. I don't see him getting anywhere close to that. So I don't think he can be anywhere where Hunter Henry is. Now, the thing about it is, you get dealing with a young quarterback, could they still throw a lot to Jared Cook? Theoretically, yeah, I could see that. But I don't see him putting up the same numbers Hunter Henry did.
All right, moving on to their defense. Last year, 21st ranked defense. For me, though, Alex, I feel like they got a little bit worse this last year. And I kind of think that the big problem for them is the fact that Bosa and Derwin James, just their health is such a risk for a team like that. You know, they only had 27 sacks last year. They had 12 interceptions, but they didn't do anything to really improve that sack total if Bosa can't stay healthy. So, you know, that defense needing those who stay healthy, I think, is a huge risk. It's a huge factor, kind of like you just talked about. Injured people always are injured, and those guys are always injured, especially Derwin James. I don't think we don't even know what Derwin James is like anymore, it feels like. So I think it's a team with a huge red flag on defense. I think you should stay away from them. Can you make any counterpoints to that, Alex?
Well, they're bringing in a new defensive coordinator who had the number one defense. This is the problem. He doesn't have Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey on his team. Do I think Staley can come in and kind of make the defense a little better than it was last year? Absolutely. Do I think they're going to be a fantasy defense that's worth drafting? No. I would stay absolutely positively stay away with it. The only thing I would think about ever picking up Chargers defense, if you have a bye week and you need to play matchups, and maybe you get the Chargers play a weak offense. But other than that, you don't draft them.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. All right, let's move on to the Raiders now. I guess, how long is the leash for John Gruden? Because his team, he's had it now for 3 years since he's came back. And they just went through what feels like a massive rebuild outside of keeping Carr. So, you know, how long do you think the leash is for Gruden with this team?
That's the real question, because he obviously got a massive contract. But this is the thing about it, and this is what's so funny about it. Mark Davis is probably one of the poorest owners. I know that sounds funny because you talk about millionaires and billionaires. He's probably the poorest owner in football. So, yeah, he can fire John Gruden, but he's still on the hook. And I don't think Mark Davis has the money to pay out the rest of John Gruden's contract. So, I don't know whether or not so he's got a pretty far leash. So they needed him to get them to Vegas to get them to sell some tickets. So this is going to be the first season where they're actually really inviting full fans. So that's really what he was hired for. He was hired to kind of, you know, get them to get the stadium so they could get some sales. So I think he's got a leash. I don't know about Mayock, the GM. He might not have a leash if he keeps drafting really bad, though.
It's kind of – it's crazy because I had to, like, reread it just to believe it. But 10 years, $100 million for a coach, like, he's 3 years in, year one of his second time around with the Raiders. He's 4-12 year one, 7-9 year two, 8-8 year three. And now rebuilding the roster, it doesn't feel like he's going to take a big jump forward like he did last time. And, you know, the first time with the Raiders, he was 8-8, 8-8, 30-12-4, big jump. And as you guys know how it goes, Raiders fans, year four, he does not as well, still good. And then he leaves and goes win the championship for another team year five. So, I don't know. I think it's just kind of crazy. But so last year, they're 8-8, 10th in points scored, but 30th in points allowed. So probably not a good thing. Their position grade is 23rd in the league. So they probably played a little bit better than their record. And I think I kind of agree with that. So moving on with their transactions, Alex, on terms of draft, let's start with their first round pick. Guard tackle, not sure where he is, but he's slotting in as right tackle, I believe, Alex Leatherwood. So you like that pick?
As I said before, no, I wasn't too crazy about it. There were players that I probably would have looked at getting, you know, them drafting, but they kind of have gone, like you talk about doing a rebuild, they kind of overhaul a little bit their offensive line. So offensive line had came from one of their strengths to one of their weaknesses. So I guess they sit back on it. I guess they had to try to get an offensive lineman. I just wasn't a big Leatherwood. I thought Leatherwood was probably at the best a second rounder, at the worst a third rounder. But I guess they absolutely positively love the player. So I hope it works out for them. But I wasn't as high on him as others were.
Yeah, their offensive line scares me. I mean, their center, I think, is Andre James, undrafted 2019. He's played one snap. Rich Incognito, who's, you know, he has good years, but he's also 38 years old. Colton Miller, your left tackle, he graded out average. Good, the right guard graded out average. Denzel Good. So there's nothing on the offensive line that's really promising, but hopefully Leatherwood pans out, because if not, that offensive line is going to be interesting, to say the least. Any other draft picks that interested you, Alex, besides Leatherwood, or do you want to talk about besides Leatherwood?
Talking about a draft show, kind of post-draft show, I was kind of scratching my head at how many safeties they drafted. They had just drafted the Jonathan Abram a couple years earlier. Obviously, he hasn't lived up to the hype, but they drafted Morick out of TCU. I really loved him. I thought he was the best safety in the draft. Then you got Devon Diablo. I think he's more of the linebacker safety kind of hybrid type. But Tyree Gillespie, I really loved him. I wouldn't be surprised at the end of the year he takes Abram's spot, from the simple fact the type of player he is. A lot of times NFL wants to get younger and cheaper, so I wouldn't be surprised at that. But obviously they thought the safety position, or just the kind of hybrid linebacker position, was something they needed to look at. It's kind of a little crazy, for the simple fact most teams value cornerbacks before safeties, but based off the draft, they obviously thought safeties were a little bit more important than that.
Yeah, Jonathan Abram's kind of an interesting story, because he was a first-round pick in 2019. His grade was very bad that year, and last year his grade was somehow worse, making him the worst-graded safety in all of football. And to kind of put things into perspective, Alex, he had the worst coverage grade of all the safeties in football as well. So when you mix that with Trayvon Mullen, Case Hayward Jr., we talked about Hayward Jr. a little while ago, how, you know, the Chargers should have kept him. But those corners, you know, they're not elite corners. They're average at best corners, ? I think what you're saying about Abram being replaced is, I agree with you, and I think it needs to happen. He's had two full years. I know he's been injured here and there, but that's such a bad grade. We talked about Richie Incognito being an addition, kind of being brought in. What other additions did they have, Alex, of note that you saw?
As far as free agency concerned?
Any transaction, any addition outside of the draft.
Well, you know what? Their defense was terrible last year. And I give them kudos for trying their best to go out there and get some players that can definitely turn the defense around. They got Ngakoue. He was kind of going to be the big free agent pass rusher that was covered, and somehow they got him on a kind of a two-year, $26 million deal. Ngakoue probably wasn't as good as his years at Jacksonville when he went to the Vikings, but hopefully he could give him some type of pass rush. They signed Jonathan Hankins. They signed Quentin Jefferson, so they got some beef on the interior, which they definitely needed. They signed your boy Solomon Thomas. That was good, kind of a head scratcher, but maybe he didn't pan out in San Francisco. Maybe he might do something in Oakland. I'm not Oakland, but in Vegas. And then we already talked about the secondary. They signed Carl Joseph at safety. They re-signed. They signed Hayward from the Chargers. So they did a lot on their defensive side to kind of help them out. They were so bad last year. The thought is they can't go anywhere but up. But I mean, this is the Raiders with Gruden. I don't. I expect the unexpected.
Yeah, did you cover offensive side with Drake and Brown?
Yeah, I like the Drake pick for the simple fact he could be a definite compliment to Jacobs. Jacobs is they've kind of looking at his carries. They kind of been trying to run this guy into the grave. But you got a couple other backs that can kind of help out with the Drake and Theoretic. I think that kind of helps out. I think they probably should have got a little bit more aggressive with the wide receiver position. But they got kind of like the Travelers, and you can tell it's John Gruden all over. You got the John Browns of the world, the Willie Steens of the world, guys who are just guys who just do their job, hard workers, kind of Gruden grinders. But they didn't get any number one wide receiver that you're sitting there saying, okay, we got to, they don't have Amari Cooper, if that's what I'm trying to tell you. So.
Yeah, tracking some of their losses. Some losses I see: Alex, Trent Brown, Rodney Hudson, Tyrell Williams, Nelson Aguilar, who John Gruden praised and wanted to bring him back, and they didn't. Gabe Jackson, LaMarcus Joyner. I mean, you have some big names. Now, yes, a lot of those were hurt players outside of Aguilar. They probably all had injury moments of being hurt last year, but. I mean, those are some big names, right? Is there anyone else that you're tracking that was that they lost over the offseason of note?
They lost Jeff Heath, the GOAT. So that's a big loss for them, Greatest safety
Oh,
all
yeah.
time. It never was.
Yep, of course. Oh, my God.
Hey, he owns Aaron Rodgers for some reason, and we don't know why. He sucks doing everything else, but he owns elite quarterbacks for some reason. I think it's just that elite quarterbacks just think he sucks and just decides to throw his way, and he gets free picks from that. He even picked off Mahomes in the game they won earlier last year.
So ridiculous. That was the one Kansas City lost of that was relevant. It's insane. Transaction that you like the most. I put Ngakwe. Now of all positions on defense, probably I guess they could use him. But he's never had less than 8 sacks a year. The secondary has a lot of questions. You have Max Crosby who had a down year. Farrell, who's graded well but doesn't get sacks. There's really not a big pass rush. So that's the one I like the most. It was adding Ngakwe. What about you? Is there a transaction you like the most?
I like Casey Hayward. I don't think he's near the player he was, but he definitely is a veteran who's been there, who's been on winning football teams. He could kind of come in there, which is what really Gruden wanted him for. Gruden does really good with veterans. He's not that good with young players. So veterans coming in his team, kind of especially the Oakland way, veterans that get cast off and everyone thinks it's the end of their career or they can't make anywhere. Those players are the ones that actually the Raiders turn around and actually make good. So. They needed cornerback help. I know they drafted Buck, we talked safeties before, but they desperately needed cornerback help. So I think he can step in right now and just be a starting level cornerback. I couldn't say they had starting level cornerbacks last year.
Yep, that's true. Transaction that you liked the least, Alex. Which one did you like the least that they made?
Oh man. Any one of the offensive linemen, they traded. I don't know whether, they just decided that the money was just too big. I would probably, if I had to pick one, I would probably say the Gabe Jackson one. Rodney Hudson too as well, but the Gabe Jackson one, that kind of scratched my head. I didn't know. And maybe sometimes we don't know different things that happen behind the scene. Maybe the player was upset, maybe wanted a new deal, something like that. But I just didn't understand why you get rid of good players. And that's just kind of been what Gruden's been doing for the last 3 years. Every time they have a great player, they trade them. They got rid of Khalil Mack. They got rid of Amari Cooper. Aguilar somehow balls out and looks like he's amazing, and they don't even re-sign him. So I don't get where Oakland again, what the Raiders are doing.
Yeah, the one I like the least, you know, and I know you see like Kenyon Drake. I just don't like the money investing $5.5 million into Kenyon Drake as a backup or, you know, change of pace running back. I agree with what you're saying that Jacobs can't carry everything, and he didn't as much last year as he does as his first year. His first year he had the ball a lot more. It felt like at least last year he didn't have the ball as much. But yeah, Drake is good for that change of pace. I just don't like Drake for $5.5 million. I would have wished that they would have gave that money to someone else on the offensive line to just somewhere. I just didn't like it. Let's move on to the fantasy positions. Carr was the number 20 fantasy quarterback at 17 fantasy points per game, 4,100 passing yards, 27 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. However, he is capped off with his wide receivers being John Brown, Henry Ruggs, who rated as one of the worst wide receivers in football last year, and Bryan Edwards, one of the younger prospects. Yes, he does have Waller, but with worse wide receivers, worse offensive line, do you see Carr doing better than QB number 20 next year, Alex?
I want to say he does better because I've kind of seen Derek Carr get better over the years. And I think last year was one of his best years, and he really didn't have a true number one. But this wide receiver core, I don't know who's going to step up. I mean, they got a bunch of number twos and threes and fours, and nice little wide receivers that you kind of, you know, love. Nice little names, but there's no one that when it's third and whatever, you got to make a play that I can trust on this team. So as be nice, I could say he's probably going to be at the same area fantasy-wise, but I don't see much improvement, especially with the deterioration of offensive line.
It's so weird because, like, their starting three of Brown, Ruggs, and Edwards could be as good as their 5, 6, and 7. Like, yeah, like they have Zay Jones, Willie Snead, and Trey Quinn. Like, I don't know who's better, like their starters or their backups. So it's not a good thing. But all right. So next, Josh Jacobs, number 14 running back. To me, he was a frustrating fantasy running back to have. I expected him to break out, but it seemed like he didn't get the touches in the game like he did the previous year. He had 5 games over 20 fantasy points, but then every other game was under 13.8. So there was no like consistency. It was all or nothing almost as a running back number one. Does he improve on number 14 being now that they have Kenyon Drake as a change of pace back to take carries away from him? What do you think, Alex?
So he averaged 3.9 yards a carry. And we talked about kind of the frustrating part with him. And you talk about this coming year, he's going to have a worse offensive line. He had offensive line last year, but they handed him the ball. He's got 4 yards guaranteed, which the 3.9 yards per carry kind of makes me a little scared. I think he actually gets worse. He had 12 touchdowns rushing last year. I wouldn't be surprised if he has less rushing touchdowns. You already talked about King and Drake. And even Theo Riddick, you know, I know he hasn't been much in the last couple of years, but can I see Gruden wanting to throw more to the backs and kind of split guys out and different things like that? Yeah, I can see that. So I don't think King and Drake is going to steal much from him, but I definitely know that with all the situations going on, Jacobs is not going to have his – he's not going to be 14. I'd say I wouldn't be surprised if he's between 15 and 20. I think I would draft him, obviously. I don't think he should be regarded as running back one or anything like that. If you draw RB2, okay, fine. Probably more like RB2.5, but I'm not making him RB1 in fantasy.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's an RB2, probably 14, 15, maybe a good number. So we want wide receiver, the position we just talked about, disconcerting for Buffalo. John Brown, who was a top 20 wide receiver 2 years ago, pretty much before the whole Stephon Diggs addition in Buffalo. Last year, he had a lot of injuries. He only had 33 catches, but he's slotted in to be the number one wide receiver. I don't think Henry Ruggs showed us anything to prove that he's going to be a number one receiver. So, Alex, I don't know if he'll be a top 20 wide receiver, but is this a guy that you take as a sleeper? Just because we saw what happened with Nelson Aguilar, you know, to me, I think I would take a sleeper pick on him later on, middle towards end of the draft. What about you? What do you think about John Brown?
I would too, for the simple fact, you know, just the way people are at names, you know, Ruggs is going to be overdrafted. We just know this. We don't expect much from Ruggs. We expect Ruggs to get better, but most people are going to act like Ruggs is going to be the number one wide receiver. I wouldn't be surprised as far as targets is concerned, as the wide receiver position. I wouldn't be surprised if John Brown gets more targets than Ruggs. I already talked about Gruden does not like rookies. He does not work well with rookies. Can I see him kind of putting Ruggs, in, similar last year, kind of in the doghouse to try to prove a point, to give more throws to John Brown or even Willie Snead? I could definitely see John Gruden being that type of better coach to do that. So I definitely think most people aren't going to really look at it because of Ruggs. They're going to think Ruggs is the number one wide receiver. But I think you can end up getting someone like Brown later in the rounds who will be a number one wide receiver in theory. And you can get, especially if you're talking about PPR. So I think he could be a definite sleeper. Obviously, we were on a show talking about him, so he's not going to be much of a sleeper anymore. But I definitely know in the later rounds or the mid rounds, people are going to forget about him, and you get a number one wide receiver right there.
All right, Henry Ruggs and his 4.27 speed had 26 catches last year. Yes, he had a lot of injuries, but he's projected on some sites to have 50-plus catches, 5 touchdowns. Alex, do you think that is too high? I think I agree with what you just said. John Gruden, I could see some weird crap with Willie Snead getting carries, Hunter Renfrow, a lot of flaring out running backs. Do you think Henry Ruggs can exceed 50 catches this next year?
See, if you had told me what I expected from him, I expected him to be right between 40 and 50 catches because obviously last year he was hurt. So I would kind of, that would kind of be my what I would think he would get. But like I said, fantasy-wise, I just know just the way we've done fantasy drafts for many years, we know those sexy names that don't produce, Ruggs is going to be one of them. So me personally, if I'm in a draft, especially when we have an auction draft, something like that, you're throwing them up because you know somebody's going to overpay for them. I think he's going to be better than last year, but I don't expect him to have a 1,500-yard receiving or a 1,000-yard receiving year or 5 to 10 touchdowns or anything like that.
Oh, I'm definitely throwing Henry Ruggs up on the board because I know exactly who's going to take him in our league. So
we both do.
Yep. He knows who we're talking about when he listens. But let's move on to tight end. Waller was number 2 tight end last year. Easily going to be a lock for the top 3, Alex. I don't even think we have to talk about that. He had 107 catches, almost 1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns on 146 targets. He was technically the most targeted tight end in football by 1 target, I think. Can you give me any reason why he won't be a top 3 tight end again?
No reason. He's going to be right there. The only reason I would say he's not top 3 is because someone had a crazy, insane year and overtook him. And he's not top 3. He's top 4, just based on the technicality. But, I mean, he's going to put up numbers again.
So I'm going to claim it right now. Waller's going to be the number 1 tight end in football this next year. I think he's going to pass Kelsey. Kittle has injury problems staying healthy. I think I have Waller as the number 1 tight end this year.
He had 107 targets. I wouldn't be surprised if he had 130.
He had 107 catches. He had 146 targets.
So, 146. So I wouldn't be surprised if he had more, 20, 30 more.
No, Nelson Aguilar. Yeah, I mean, he's a former wide receiver. Like, he's a mismatch nightmare in a division with no one that can guard him. So, yeah. So, defense, Alex, let's just cut right to it. I only need your opinion. Sixth worst defense in all of football. They only had 10 interceptions. They had 21 sacks, fourth worst in all of football. Stay away from them. They did not get better on defense. We're moving on. I'm not going to ask for your opinion, Alex. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to the Chiefs. Chiefs, let's just sum this up really quickly. They got ready for the Super Bowl revenge game, right, Alex? This is what this offseason was. It's the Super Bowl revenge, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. They were 14-2 last year. One of their two losses was to the Raiders we just talked about, which is it was a phenomenal game. The other loss was when Chad Henne was starting quarterback. So that I don't care. So they technically lost one game. Raiders played them very well. But yeah, so draft, I'll cover the draft part, Alex. They traded the number 31 pick for Orlando Brown. In my opinion, that was a steal. Orlando Brown was better than anything to get at pick number 31. You agree with that?
Oh, yeah. He's definitely – you got to talk about a Pro Bowl caliber tackle with the late first-round pick because you're basically having a second-round pick there. So, yeah, I agree.
Yep. All right. Any other draft picks that you liked that they made outside of – because to me that was their top draft pick. Was there any other draft picks that you thought was impact or will make an impact this year?
Oh, yeah. Nick Bolton out of Missouri. I think he had the best film of all linebackers. He has the best instinct. The reason he dropped is he didn't have the athleticism markers that teams look for in linebacker. But if this was 20 years ago, he would have been a top 10 pick. He's that good. Now the question is going to be, you know, with his athleticism, is he good enough to get, especially in the AFC West, so when he gets put on, you know, we already talked about the linebackers need to cover. Is he good enough when he gets put on, you know, mismatched with tight ends, running with the Wallers, running with backs? Is he athletic enough to run with them? But I love Nick Bolton. I actually was hoping Dallas would have took him with their pick, but they took a linebacker in the first round. And then Creed Humphrey is a plug-in center. I think they revamped their whole entire office line, not just in free agency, but in the trade. You talked about the trading for Orlando Brown, but also with Creed Humphrey.
Something that you just made me think about was the Chargers now have the worst tight end in the division, and they don't have anyone that can cover tight ends. Like, if they would have Derwin James, this wouldn't be a problem, but the Chargers have to deal with Kelce twice, Waller twice, and Noah Fant twice. That's insane. Without Derwin James or anyone that can match up against those tight ends, like they could just get destroyed on defense with that problem they have. Mm-hmm. Going back to Kansas City, what were some of the big additions that they had outside the draft, Alex, that you like? Because to me, clear-cut offensive line, but do you want to break down exactly what they got?
You know what? We talked about it. They got Joe Tooney. They signed him from obviously from the Patriots. They didn't want to fork up that money, so he hit free agency. Somehow, some way, they lured Kyle Long out of retirement. I thought Kyle Long was done with football, but somehow, some way, they got him out of retirement. So they've kind of, with Orlando Brown, the draft, and then you talk about signing some offensive line, they completely revamped their offensive line. They've signed Austin Blythewood as center. He's going to be competing with Creed Humphrey. So that goes into kind of what we talked about, the revenge game. They went on a revenge tour to basically revamp their offensive line. So what happened in the Super Bowl is not going to happen again.
Yeah, the major losses I had was they lost both tackles, but, I mean, let's be fair, they lost them during the season, so they just kind of cut ties with them between Schwartz and Fisher, and then Sammy Watkins is gone, who's just never there for them anyway, so essentially they didn't lose much in that position. What transaction did you like the most? Actually, Alex, going backtracking, is there any other losses other than those three that you thought were that were an impact that they're going to feel?
It's a small one, but I would say Breshawn Breeland, losing him to the Vikings. Breeland wasn't a great cornerback, but he was kind of helped them with their depth at cornerback, kind of being a guy that could come in and start at a certain time. They got Snead, which kind of a low-round pick to kind of turn into something. But I don't think they really did anything particularly. Okay, they did trade for Mike Hughes. So basically, the Vikings and them basically traded cornerbacks. So, but I think losing Breeland, he's not, like I said, Breeland's not amazing, but he's still a starting level cornerback that can help them out. I don't know if Mike Hughes is going to be able to fill that hole.
Yeah, he's a former first round pick and he didn't work under a defensive coach. So I'm not really sure how it's going to get better. Spagnuolo does good things on defense, but is there a transaction that you like the most that they made?
One that I like the most, we can go right back at it. I thought the Orlando Brown thing, and it was very interesting when they got Orlando Brown, because I'm not saying that he's only a run blocking tackle, but his best work as a tackle. So his run blocking, obviously doing for the Baltimore Ravens. So, the question is going to be to me is this a sign that maybe Andy Reid wants to run the ball a little bit more? I don't know, but I know Orlando Brown's a damn good running
Don't do that, tackle. Alex. Don't do that.
I'm trying.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire to have a good year next year after what just happened. I can't go through that pain twice. It's just me. I don't want to even talk about that. I agree with you. I actually have the same thing. Orlando Brown, the trade. I think that when you're picking at the end of the first round, there's no one better there. If you have the cap to afford that situation, I think it's a great move. Is there a transaction that you like the least by the Chiefs?
Ooh, wow. There's not one in particular. At first, I was a little shocked that they cut Eric Fisher, but they obviously revamping their offensive line. The huge thing, we talked about that a little bit before, that kind of scratched my head. I guess their thought is maybe you can get something from a former first-round pick. Maybe you can get something, from the player. Maybe he can go to a different area, different team. Maybe he will rejuvenate the club career. But I would have thought maybe a 6 or 7 round pick would probably be as good as Mike Hughes. But maybe they thought a little bit different.
Yeah, I don't know if there's one that I didn't like. I think I'm just happy with everything they did. I mean, losing Sammy Watkins, I'm not going to say is a bad thing, but the fact that he didn't get replaced by anything, even like a, Emmanuel Sanders, like anything, I think would have been better than nothing at wide receiver. Because DeMarcus Robinson, he has flashes of being good once in a while. Cole Hardman has flashes of being good once in a while, but they need something else at wide receiver, in my opinion. I don't think either of those two are going to develop into being what they need. Like they need a possession receiver. I know Kelsey kind of fills that role, but I just think there's got to be like a veteran out there that they could just sign. And that's why I just think Emmanuel Sanders would be someone like that. I know he went somewhere else, but So
another thing I'll add in here, and you talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I thought they would have went out and signed another veteran running back because they had lost Damian Williams and the Bell thing didn't work out. So you're talking about another veteran wide receiver. I thought they would have at least had signed a veteran back, maybe a third round down back that they would have liked that could be their third overall back. But they don't really need it. It's something that can help out fill out the team, but they might find something in free agency.
I mean, to be fair, they did actually get they got Jerick McKinnon. He's not. I think Jerick McKinnon is the kind of veteran back they do need because, you don't need Le'Veon Bell or someone to make all the attention. Having Jerick McKinnon is a very humble running back that will be rotational and use him when you need to. But, they still have Darwin Thompson. I think they still have Darrell Williams, the other Williams.
Yeah, they running have backs. The other Darrell Williams, the Super Bowl MVP. Yeah, they have.
Yeah. So they at least, I think they have enough to get by at that position.
Let me ask you a question. You being a 49er guy and knowing that running system, you think McKinnon is more a product of the system or you think McKinnon is that good?
When he's in Minnesota?
When he's in Minnesota, yeah. Similar system. So, they don't run the exact thing, but they run a similar system.
I mean, he had one to 2 years of being good, and him being good was kind of like when we talk about Eckler. Like, he was good as a pass-catching threat. He was never good as a running threat. So Kyle Shanahan never got to use him as the weapon he was supposed to be. So I don't know if it was a system. I think he needs to be slotted in the correct role, which is a situational third-down back, which is what he should be. He should be rotating in as a third-down back. I don't think he should be the primary third-down back, but you give him like probably 5 to 7 touches a game. I think that's perfect for him at his age, coming off those injuries. He the thing with the Niners is he kind of, once the rust came off, he was not able to have sustained wear and tear. He was not able to be like a bell cow. Niners had a lot of injuries. So I think McKinnon just needs to kind of fall into that behind those other running backs and be a situational third down back. And, so long way of answering that. Yeah. I don't think he's a product of the system. I think he's just he needs to be what he's designed to be, which is a situational third down back.
Okay.
Yep. For the Chiefs, they don't have any cap left this year. They got $20 million next year, but why does it matter? What do they really need? I don't think they really need anything. Let's move on to fantasy. Mahomes was the number one rated quarterback at fantasy points per game. If you exclude Dak Prescott, who did play a couple games, but Mahomes is number one at 25 points per game, close to 5,000 yards, 38 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He's a top 5 lock, but do you pencil him in as the number one quarterback again, Alex?
Oh, yeah. I don't see any reason why not, especially you talk about them solidifying the offensive line. If he has all day to throw back there, there's no way you can put pressure on him. I mean, he'll just drop dimes all day. I mean, there's not one cornerback who could stay more than 3 seconds with Tyreek Hill. If you're telling him he's got all day to throw, I mean, he's going to burn some people. So, and hopefully, since Kelsey's going to be my franchise player, one of my my franchise for my fantasy, hopefully that will help out and work out for me.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Since if no one's tracking on here that's listening, I have the Chiefs offense that I'm just keeping hostage besides Kelsey. So I have Mahomes and Hill, and I had Clyde Edwards-Helaire last year, which I don't think I'm going to keep again this year. Or not keep, but I don't think I'm going to drop him back next year. So he was the number 22 running back last year at 13.5 fantasy points per game. Wasn't as good as advertised. Thank you, Matthew Berry, for ruining me on that one and everyone else. But he was a good fantasy running back until week 11. But then he got injured. He went away and essentially killed everyone's hope for a playoff run, including myself. So with how much he tailed off last year, Alex, do you consider him a sleeper this year? Or where do you think you kind of rate Clyde Edwards-Helaire just because of how weird of a situation it was, going from being, you know, the Messiah of running backs to being not as advertised and then just being injured for the rest of the year? Where do you think is a good expectation of where to get him this year in the draft?
One thing, he's not a sleeper. Okay. So when no one's sleeping on him anymore, even though he didn't have the full season that we all expected him, obviously, from last year, but he's not going to be a sleeper. His first year, I mean, when you think about it, when you really look at it, his first year as a starting running back, he had 800 yards rushing, which for a first-year starting running back is actually pretty good. I know we're expecting people to come in and be like Zeke and run for almost 1,500 yards in the first year and different things like that. I understand the expectation on big-time running backs, and the running backs were drafted this year, they're going to have the same type of expectation. But I think he's going to get used a little bit more. I don't think he's going to have to worry about someone like Le'Veon Bell trying to come in and try to steal his glory or anything like that. Think about it is it's all about Andy Reid and how he uses his running backs. I think the only running back I could think of that he just absolutely just kept, you know, playing with was, well, you know, we talk about Westbrook. And the funny thing is, he said he thought Westbrook was like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So that was what the hype was. Okay, he's going to use him like Brian Westbrook. Well, he did use him. So it kind of like had us scratching our heads a little bit. I don't think – I wouldn't be surprised. Obviously, looking here, he had over 1,000 yards total. I would expect him to be somewhere between 1,200 and 1,500 this year. The difference being – he only had 4 rushing touchdowns. I think that's going to increase. I don't think he's going to have the type of year he had last year. He's a rookie. He's getting in there. He's getting more used to the full season. Remember, being a rookie, these guys are used to 12 or 13 games. They're not used to 16 games. So the condition that goes into it, too. So he's going to have a second year. I think that Andy Reid's not going to screw anybody over. But Brian, just me and you, I would not franchise him. I think you could get him for cheaper, but that's just me.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely not. He's projected to be the 17th best running back this next year. So let's move on to Tyreek Hill. Rated as the number 2 wide receiver last year, I think, behind Davante Adams in fantasy points per game. 21.9 fantasy points per game. I'm sorry. He had 19.4 fantasy points per game behind Davante Adams, who had 21.4. So Tyreek Hill, number 2, had 87 catches, 1,276 yards, 15 touchdowns. Alex, So I'll give my answer first, but you know, will Tyreek Hill be able to remain in the top two again? Because to me, no. My reasons by being this is the most catches he's ever had last year, the second most yards he's ever had, but by far the most touchdowns. I don't think 15 touchdowns is obtainable. I think it's a lot to expect, even from an offense like that. Do you think he can be a top two wide receiver again?
No, I think he'll still be in the top five. You had him last year. It seemed to me he had a lot of kind of up and down games. He have games where he just have like a okay, solid numbers, and then there are games where he just absolutely goes off and goes crazy and puts up insane numbers. So you kind of have to take his numbers with a grain of salt. I think he'd be top five, but expecting him to like you back to what you said, expect him to have the same type of numbers. And then also, I think Harmon's coming along, and I think they're going to be able to kind of spread the ball around a little bit more. So I think Hill's always going to be the deep threat, but when you have deep threats, those guys do enough to make sure that the guys underneath get the ball. So can I see people taking the deep threat away from Tyreek Hill? Yep, I can see that. But I also can see that making sure that they're spreading the ball out to more other people. So I don't think he'll be a top three, but I think he's good enough to be top five, top seven.
All right. I wasn't really planning on talking to any other wide receiver, but I guess if we are going to take a gamble on anyone, would it be Mecole Hardman? Is that the second wide receiver you take a gamble on just because he's kind of like a version of Tyreek Hill for explosive plays?
I would take him. The only thing about it is he's more your mid-round type of wide receiver. He's when you is one of the situations where you probably got two wide receivers and you maybe need a third. He's like a wide receiver three, in my opinion, at the best, maybe wide receiver four. I wouldn't take him thinking he's going to be, wide receiver two or anything like that. You do that, you're kidding yourself.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's worth taking him as a sleeper would be, you know, Tyreek Hill being his height and stature, he is injury prone. You know, so someone would have to step in. But yeah, I think I don't even know if I would want him. I've gone down that path before. But next, let's go to tight end. Kelce was the number one tight end, 105 catches, 1,400 yards, 11 touchdowns. He's a lock to be a top three. Anything else you want to add to that, Alex? Because I don't think there's anything else. Kelsey's just been the model of consistency.
Nope, I'm fine with good old Kelce, and I hope he does better than he did last year because he's definitely on my team.
Yep. All right. The defense, they were the 15th best defense, but I think I would want to stay away from that defense with how off explosive that offense is. They had 16 interceptions, 32 sacks. But their D line is scary, not in a good way. In terms of rating D linemen last year, between Frank Clark, Jaron Reed, who was supposed to be good coming from the Seahawks, and Alex Okafor, those three were rated as the 90th out of 100, essentially defensive linemen. That's how bad they were. Now you had Chris Jones, who was just, you know, a freak. He's tremendous. He's the second best D tackle in all football in terms of rating, but the other three defensive linemen were so bad. Their linebackers are rated bad. Their safeties are okay at best. I know Matthew is big on name, but last year he was just rated as an average safety. Their corners are an issue. I think there's another defense you stay away from, Alex, or do you oppose that?
They're playable, but they're not one I would draft. I wouldn't target them or want to draft them. Obviously, if you're in your standard 10, 10 player, 10 person league, them being 15th, they're not a top 10 defense that you want to, definitely do. But if you're in a deeper league, you could definitely put them on your bench. I wouldn't plan on playing them. Or you're in a bye week and you're looking for a good matchup, maybe you get a good matchup with them. But I definitely wouldn't plan to draft them.
Yeah. Let's now go to breaking down the over-unders on the teams and picking where we think they're going to finish. Alex, you have the over-unders ready?
Yes, I do.
All right, let's go with the Chiefs. What do you have the over-under at for the Chiefs?
Chiefs over under is at 12 even.
12 even. So I got them winning 14 games. Their schedule, their toughest part of their schedule is Browns at Ravens, Chargers at Eagles, Bills at Washington, at Tennessee, Giants, Packers, Vegas, Dallas. After that, the last, I think, six are cupcake games. But with how good the Chiefs are, you know, even playing against the Ravens, the Bills, at Tennessee, Packers, and that little group I mentioned there, you know, at worst, they're going to split those four games, and I feel like they can win the rest. So I have them winning 14 games, Alex. What do you have?
I have them winning 15, and the teams, I think I got them, I had them pegged to losing. I think they're going to lose a couple of division games. It's that AFC West is just a weird one. It's those matchups are always just weird. You know, in the historically, you can ask any Raider fan, whenever Raiders are good, they always can't beat Denver. And the Kansas City is that type of way. I wouldn't be surprised if the Chargers swept them. I wouldn't be surprised if they split with the Chargers again this year. So I got them losing two divisional games. But I got them beating all the rest of the teams. I got them sweeping the NFC East. I know the Browns are kind of like the threat or whatever right now, but I don't think any of those teams as good as they are. I will say one thing: their defense is not as good as they used to be in their Super Bowl winning years. I wouldn't be surprised they're in a couple of shootouts, so I wouldn't put it past that.
All right. Moving on to the Raiders, where were the Raiders at?
They actually have the Vegas at 7.5.
Okay, I'm taking the under. I have them winning six games. With them, they have, I think, two games that are winnable, they're technically easy on their schedule. I think they'll split a couple games in their division. But outside of that, I think it's kind of – I think they regressed. I don't think they got better. You know, they play the Bengals. They play the Eagles. Outside of that, the schedule's not exactly easy. I mean, Pittsburgh, Miami, Chargers, Bears, Broncos, Giants, Cowboys, Washington, you know, Cleveland. I just don't think the Raiders improved their roster to have a better win total. So I got them at six.
Yeah, I have them under on that one. Yeah, back to what you said. They just – it's depressing because there's certain franchises that I don't care what anyone said. I love when they're winning because it makes the sport better. Raiders are one of those guys. There used to be, when I was a kid, the kind of the bad boys, the team that everyone loved to kind of root for, but secretly they want to like. And just seeing how far this franchise has fallen since they lost that Super Bowl to Tampa Bay – it's just astounding how this franchise has fallen. And last year, they probably should have made the playoffs, but I think they muffed a couple of games that they should have won. I'm not going to be surprised if they're a middle-of-the-road type of team again this year. But once again, they muffed those games. So, yeah, I got them at about five or six wins. And then also, they're going to have to start making some decisions on exactly what the future of this franchise is going to be. Because I think Derek Carr is he's coming up to needing a contract extension in the next year or two. So, yeah, they're going to have to start making some hard decisions after this year.
All right, let's move on to the Chargers. What's the over-under set for the Chargers?
Chargers are at 9.
Okay. So, for me, I've been going back and forth between 8 and 9. Well, before I started looking into their team, I thought they were a 9-10 team win. I think I was blinded by the Justin Herbert clouds that everyone was blinded by also. But when you look at their defense is concerning to me. They're, like I said, they're a Bosa and injury away. They've never had a healthy Derwin James. If those two are gone again, I have a hard time believing they can keep up with all these teams, no matter how good they were. No matter how good Justin Herbert was, because, I mean, they won seven games last year. They won their last four. But I just have a hard time seeing them taking a huge step. So I guess I have the under. I have them winning 8 games, Alex.
I got them pushing. I got them at 9, which is still good for that franchise. As bad as their defense is, I think Staley's going to come in. I'm not saying they're going to be a gangbuster defense, but I think he's going to be good enough to kind of come in, tweak some things defensively. I think they're going to be able to compete outside of the AFC West because they're going to have to play the Chiefs twice a year, so that's always going to be a struggle. I believe, you know, I believe in this team. I believe in this team. I think they're headed in the right direction. The thing about it being 9-8, is that going to be good enough for the playoffs? We'll talk about it probably later on when we get through the end of kind of matching everybody up. But I got them at 9 wins. I could think they could get 9 wins. I think they could steal some extra games in their division. So.
So I just want to read out their schedule last year. Their wins last year, the Bengals, the Jaguars, the Jets, the Falcons, the Chiefs, when they bench their players, they have an overtime win against Vegas, and then they beat Denver by 3. To me, that's not really anything I'd be excited about. Sorry, Chargers fans. But when those are your wins, and you did not do a lot to add stuff to your roster, I just that defense is so bad potentially. It just really scares me. So yeah, I'm sticking by my 8 wins.
You can
I may
also
even
think
I
about it this way. You can also think about it this way. They played the Saints in New Orleans, and they should have beat them. But because of inexperience, and back to what you said, back to the defense, a couple of close games they had, and they absolutely muffed them. That's what got Anthony Lynn fired. So I'm going out on limb too, because I think you're nice with the 8. I would be surprised if they're 7 or 6. I just believed in these guys. I think 9 is what I'm shooting for.
All right, let's go to the Broncos. What do you have the over under at for the Broncos?
They have the Denver Broncos at 7.5.
Give me the over. I have the Broncos winning 9 games because their roster is so solid outside the quarterback position that they literally need him to just not throw the ball away or not throw it. Tons of interceptions. I have a hard time believing that Drew Lock will be worse next year. And even if he starts out bad, they can just turn it right over to Teddy Bridgewater, who is essentially is the game manager of the NFL. I don't know. I think their schedule allows them to win enough games. They have talent at every position. It's just quarterback, which I know is a huge if, but they get to play. They get to play Detroit, Cincinnati, Philadelphia, and the Jets and Jacksonville this year. That's 5 games the Broncos should win right there by itself. So, because of that reason, I think they can split a couple games. I think they can give a team like Washington a good run, a team like the Giants a good run, because the Giants, Daniel Jones, week 1, not exactly intimidating. And Saquon Barkley may not be ready week 1. So, Washington, we'll see how they are. And we know they're a defensive juggernaut, but I think Denver can hang in a defensive game. So those are my reasons why I think Denver is kind of a sleeper team to kind of sneak in and steal the second seed in the West. I think they could be a playoff team, but man, if Locke can develop to not be a great quarterback, not be a good quarterback, but an above average quarterback, I think this team could be dangerous because we saw what they did with Peyton Manning with his, with his bad arm. So I got them locked in for 9 wins, Alex. What do you got?
9 wins. Wow. Wow.
I told you 5 games right there that are games they should win easily. They're playing 5 of the worst teams in the league, Alex, right there.
Well, that's also answering the question, obviously, that they're going to go 5-0 against those teams. The funny thing is, those teams are
Chargers
saying,
did it.
yeah,
Chargers did it last year.
the funny thing is, those teams are actually looking at the schedule saying putting Denver down is a win for them. It's so funny how the NFL works that way. I got the under, but I don't have the under by that much. I got to win the 7 games. I cannot trust what they're doing at quarterback. If you told me Locke just play, I'll put it this way, play Mitch Trubisky football. You don't have to be amazing. Just don't lose the game for us. Kind of make some plays with your feet every once in a while to throw or whatever. I think they could be really good. We already talked about the roster earlier today. So I think they could be really good. The thing about it is, I don't trust Drew Lock. I think he's going to put him in some really bad situations.
I want to give you a counterpoint. I want to give you a quick counterpoint. Have you ever trusted Blake Bortles? Don't you lie to me. Don't you lie to me. Have you ever
trusted Blake Bortles? I trusted Blake Bortles when he was a rookie. Because obviously when a guy's a rookie, you have expectations. But after that, no, he didn't trust him. It took me probably to the third quarter of that AFC Championship game when they were beating, they were playing New England, saying, my goodness, Blake Bortles is about to take a team to the Super Bowl, to me just actually to give his due. And then 5 minutes later, it was over, you know. So, yeah, to your point, you're right.
So that's why I just want to make that point, because I think this Denver roster is as good, if not better, than that Jacksonville roster that had Blake Bortles. I think when you have a schedule lined up like this, it's given to you as long as you have a solid roster, a good coach, and a quarterback that isn't the 32nd ranked quarterback in the league. So that you know, that's why I'm standing by that. I think the Broncos are going to surprise people.
Let me give you a counterpoint. Since we're doing counterpoints, let me give you a counterpoint, okay? That Jacksonville Jaguar team, what division were they in?
Oh, the greatest division of football, AFC South.
AFC South? Okay.
Yep.
I think Denver's division is a little bit harder, having the previous AFC Championship team in it and the Super Bowl team prior in it. So I think – to your point, they absolutely can, you know, the whole thing with me saying the Chargers win the 9 wins, I can absolutely see Denver sweeping the Chargers and Denver having 9 wins and the Chargers having 7. It can absolutely go that way. It could basically be the exact same thing. The only thing about it is it's if they obviously traded for a quarterback, they traded for Teddy Bridgewater. They absolutely are talking about getting Aaron Rodgers. They don't believe in him just as much as we don't believe, but I don't believe in him. That's all my thing. But would I be surprised if just they have a top five defense next year? Absolutely not. I wouldn't be surprised at that. Would I be surprised? We talked about the running game being one of the better running games. Absolutely not. I just can't put my name and my namesake on Drew Lock. I'm sorry.
Yep. Got it. Understood. But that's why I said 9 wins, not 12 or 13. So – all right. So finishing the division. So the way I have division finishing, Alex, is I have the Chiefs finishing first, the Broncos second, the Chargers third, and the Raiders fourth. And it looks like on your side, you have the Chiefs first also, of course, but you have the Chargers. Essentially, we have the Chargers and Broncos flipped. You have the Chargers being the second team with the 9 wins. And so, yeah, that's really where it flipped, is Chargers and Broncos. So,
and it's basically like we talked about the sweep. If they split, they might be both 8 wins. But if I have the Chargers sweeping the Broncos, but if the Broncos sweep the Chargers, then we're right where you're at, saying 9 wins.
Now, the problem is the Chargers don't have the easy games that the Broncos are the only team in the division with those easy games. The Chargers don't have the Chargers play the Texans and the Eagles also. So, they also have the Eagles. But that's the only game. They have the Texans and Eagles. There's no easy game on their schedule. I'm gonna keep saying it, the Broncos have 5 easy games. But you know, we'll see how it all plays out. I will say if the Chargers can get through this, they'll be very battle tested because they do play some good teams on their schedule. And as Kevin Garnett said, anything's possible. So to wrap this up, Alex, is there any other last final points you want to make before we close this out?
No, I don't have anything particular. Only thing I'd say is we looked at the AFC West. It's going to be hard for me seeing Kansas City not repeat as the AFC championship, barring injury. I mean, looking at what the Chiefs have done, it's going to be hard to stop them this year.
I think it's going to be hard to stop them or the Bucks from meeting the Super Bowl again, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right, so that wraps up episode 27. Next time we record, I think we're going to be doing an NBA draft recap free agency episode. And then after that, for the next football, we'll be doing NFC West. So those are the two next ones we'll be doing. I'm hoping to get a hockey one in here somewhere. I'm just trying to find the right person to counterpoint. If if you're listening and you want to give a crack at talking hockey, please let me know. I do want to talk hockey soon. There's so much stuff going on. So thanks for listening, guys. Check out our Facebook page, Sports Talk for Fans by Fans page, and the group. On the group, we post all the polls and on conversation. So please join and talk there. Hit the share button once you post this on social media for the podcast and get us help us get more listeners and people talking on that page. So have a great one, and we'll catch you guys next episode.